Welcome to another episode of Morning Coffee with your host, Rick Alexander. I started this show to talk about all of the interesting, complex, paradoxical, and sometimes uncomfortable aspects of the human experience. If you get anything from this show, the greatest compliment you could give me is to share this show with somebody that you think the message may resonate with, or to head to iTunes and give us a 5-star review. Additionally, if you want to interact with me, you can follow me at @RickAlexander_ on Instagram. Without further ado, on to the show. Thursday. Welcome back to Morning Coffee. I know last week I said that I was done reading Out of Ambitious Heroes and Heartache, but you know, as I'm doing this rewrite, this revised edition, it's a little bit like a home improvement project. I don't know if any of you homeowners out there have decided to do something little to your house and then, you know, you think maybe it'll take you a few days and then 3 weeks go by and you've done 50 runs to Home Depot or Lowe's and you've spent 5 times as much money as you thought you were going to and 10 times as much time. That is a little bit what it's like for me right now rewriting this book. Be that as it may, I have decided there are 2 more chapters that are actually coming out of the book completely. So today and tomorrow, I'm going to go through those chapters. I'm going to read them in real time instead of just playing the audiobook version of them. That way I can kind of talk about different points as they come up if they kind of strike me to do so. It's just a little bit of a better experience for the reader. We can get through a little bit of the information in a more thorough way. So that's what I'm gonna do. Today I'm gonna read a chapter called Born for Wonder, and then tomorrow I'm gonna read a chapter called Buttons That Make Us Feel Good. Now, both of these chapters are coming out of the book. Born for Wonder is becoming the prologue and it's getting rewritten. And then Buttons That Make Us Feel Good is going to come out completely, but I'll probably just post it as a blog post or something like that if you guys want to read it. That being said, I'm going to leave the original audio version of Ambitious Heroes and Heartache up on Audible, even when I release the revised edition. So if you do like these chapters that I've been reading over the last few weeks in the form that they're in, you can still have that book, so you can buy it at audible.com. I won't sell the physical copy because I'm working on the editing and stuff like that, but the audio version of these will stay up, and then, of course, they'll be on here as well. So today, we're going to talk about this chapter called Born for Wonder. There's some great concepts in here that if you can allow to land right, they could definitely change the way that you're experiencing your world. It's very subtle shifts in perspective, but they really do matter. So I started this with a quote by Joseph Campbell. He said, "Suddenly you're ripped into being alive, and life is pain, and life is suffering, and life is horror, but my God, you are alive, and it's spectacular." So from the time that we're born, we look at the world with wide-eyed wonder. It all starts when we're thrust into a new reality for which we don't feel ready. In fact, this is the first time of many in your life that you are completely equipped for something that you didn't feel ready. You had all the basics, the ability to process oxygen, consume nutrients, and to adapt to a new environment, if only for a little nurturing. What you lacked was the tactical knowledge about how to be in the world. Communication and movement patterns were clumsy, and you had to learn to process that information that you were exposed to. Yet, despite the lack of understanding about the world, you persisted, and here you are, reading a book about how you are, or listening to a podcast. You've unquestionably come a long way since infancy, and while that's not groundbreaking, and what's important to understand is that you were born for this life, a concept so literal that every one of us loses track of its metaphorical implications. Realistically, what that means is that since day zero, you've been scavenging the unknown for information and then assimilating to the unknown based on what you've learned. You've been doing that since long before you knew what it actually meant to learn something. It is when we allow our imagination to trample along the edge of what we know that we're able to map out the wild. Whenever I use the term wild in this book, or in this chapter for today, I'm talking about unknown territory. I'm talking about where you've never been. You know, that's what presents, the unknown presents anxiety to us when we don't have a good relationship with it. And so when I use the word wild, that's what I'm talking about. Humans find their niche as we engage with what we've already mapped out. This is the process of adaptation, and you, just like everyone you know, have been specifically positioned for it. We're literally born to take on a world we don't feel ready for. You should be careful not to forget this when you're scared to pivot or take on a new role in life. Being ready for something in life isn't about being perfect. It's about being willing and teachable. It's about having the right amount of nurture to fully express your nature. Now, something I think that is super important right there is, you know, I say we're literally born to take on a world we don't feel ready for, right? It's like what we are is adaptable. What we are as humans are, let's say, creatures that scan the environment for information that we can then integrate into ourselves and then carry on. So we scavenge the environment and then we adapt to it. We scavenge the environment for information and then we adapt to it. When we're in this infantile state, we contain the full spectrum of human emotions. To know this, all you have to do is spend a little time hanging around a baby. If they're stimulated enough, in a matter of about 10 minutes, they will run through every emotion known to man. Since babies haven't learned to regulate their emotions, similar to many adults, and because they have an inability to communicate what it is they need, also similar to many adults, they end up wearing every one of these emotions on their facial expressions. Regardless of how you feel and think in your inner world, see, if you aren't able to communicate those feelings to the world around you, then your outer self, the one facing your friends, family, and coworkers, will always feel misunderstood. Communication is how we give birth to the thoughts we've deemed worthy of reality. Improving communication is a prerequisite for an exquisite human experience. How you communicate is how you are perceived. So just that one paragraph in there about communication, I wanted to add it because there are so many people that just feel misunderstood. It's more when you feel that, because I've definitely felt that throughout my life, it's actually normally a matter of poor communication. Like you feel something, but you don't have the ability to communicate it to the outside world around you. Sometimes with lovers, this happens, right? This is why the love languages are so important, because if you, you know, I'll give a quick expose here on the love languages, but basically they tell you, one, how you receive love, as in how you feel appreciated, and then two, how you give love, so how you make other people feel appreciated. Now, two people can easily be in love, but if their love languages are different, what we do is we tend to make people experience love or to help people feel appreciated in the ways that we feel appreciated. But if the person we're trying to make feel loved has a different love language than we do, then there's a miscommunication there and a misunderstanding. It's not that love doesn't exist. It's that we don't have the ability to communicate that love. So maybe my love language is words of affirmation and yours is physical touch, right? So if I want, that means that when people give me words of affirmation, I feel loved. What that means is I'm most likely going to help other people feel loved by giving them words of affirmation. Now, if the way that you feel loved is by physical touch, understand that just because you don't feel loved doesn't mean that there's not love there. So do you see how these like small amounts of miscommunication can like, they almost bar us from our own life in some way? It's like we get stuck behind our inability to communicate and to be front facing with the world in that way. So that's all. Okay. We're always staring out at the world of infinity and trying to make sense of it with our finite minds. This is the fundamental role of wonder in our lives. Lots of people take this ability for granted and believe that all humans come to it innately. What we rarely stop to notice is just how much utility our wonder has for us. In short, wonder is the way that we theorize how we are going to contend with what we don't yet know. It is the part of our mind that can imagine different outcomes and then begin ordering them in order to make sense of them. At its best, wonder is soaked in possibility for upward mobility, whatever upward happens to mean to you. At our best, we lean into wonder and use it as a tool for navigating the world. Wonder allows you to look at the parts of your life that are incredibly unrefined and see what's beautiful about them. It's the first step in drawing a bridge from where you are to where you want to be, and it's a free resource that we can all access. Just like other parts of our humanity, however, we won't have control of it if we spend our entire lives denying it and repressing it. Children are told repeatedly while growing up to stop daydreaming, essentially to stop using their imagination. What you will find is that this rhetoric is often espoused by people who had their own creative intelligence stifled. If you want to understand human nature, start by understanding that we are chameleons that propagate the lessons that we are exposed to, often against our best judgment. If someone has their evolution of growth stifled in any area throughout their lives, they are far more likely to do the same to others. The same goes for anything you might be exposed to while developing. If you grow up religious, you're far more likely to raise your kids that way, and the same goes for being molested as a child. This is why generational trauma is difficult to break. It's easy to believe that our nature is always affected by a subjective understanding of right and wrong, when in fact, it's more accurate to describe it as being predominantly affected by what has been and what hasn't been. So what I'm saying there is sometimes when we are unconscious, before we wake up to ourselves and to our lives and to the opportunity that every moment presents, that's kind of like one of the Buddha's basic teachings, right? Is that every moment presents a new opportunity to act differently. But before we do that, we mostly just mimic our environment because you can think about it like this, there's something in the back of your mind constantly taking notes. You got a little secretary back there, and every single thing that happens to you, it's like, oh, this is how we survive. Oh, this is how we move through the world. Oh, this is how we, and it's taking notes about what you've experienced. And so sometimes we look at our lives and they're not what we want them to be. It's important to understand that you are living out the map that the secretary in the back of your mind has made according to your life. And so oftentimes what holds us back in reality isn't reality itself. It is the patterns that we're living out that we have been taught. And oftentimes, again, we are just unconscious to what these patterns even are. And so, one of the most courageous decisions you could ever make is to stop the line of generational trauma, like to choose that you're not going to project onto your kids what's been projected onto you. So back into the reading. The fully integrated person is the one who can take what they're receiving and actually choose how to interpret and respond to it. They no longer act on individual emotion and wounds, but instead can conceptualize why they are feeling what they are feeling. From that, they can then choose to act in a way that is by their own volition and not out of what they think they need to do in order to survive. This is how hurt people stop hurting people. They inventory their feelings and emotions and dispositions to know which characteristics are serving them and which need reparenting. The less integrated your personality, the more of a need you have to expose yourself to positive narratives that you want to adopt. While no one can stand to be in a toxic environment 24/7, someone that has done the work to integrate the different aspects of their personality and who has become secure in his identity has much less of a chance of having his mood and feelings toward himself subjected to the whims of the world around him or her. So what I'm saying here is that, like, when you're starting off on your growth journey, right, because we have these mirror neurons, right, because we mimic our environment and then integrate what we see into our behavior, When you're deciding to make a change in life, it's really important that you put yourself in a position where you only are around things that are where you want to go. That's why the quote that people say, like the Jim Rohn quote, you're the average of the five people that you hang out with the most. That's why, because you have mirror neurons that are creating a map for how to be in the world. And so when you want to be in a different place, you've got to map the world out in a different way. You've got to live out different patterns. And oftentimes, especially at first, that means just getting around people, mentors, people that can lift you up and help you get to that new level of life, let's say. All right. While you're looking to make changes or grow or pivot towards something else in life, it's imperative that you only consume information that is actually helpful and positive. Whatever your life looks like now is a reflection of the soil that you have maintained. If you try to grow something new in that same soil, you can't be too surprised when you have a hard time doing so and achieving success. We become what we're exposed to. And so in some sense, if you don't like who you've become, then you have to expose yourself to alternate settings. What this means for you is that if you are having trouble seeing options for your life, then it's because your environment isn't maintained in a way that allows you to see the options. If you truly decide that it's time to grow and you're committed to getting through all of the discomfort that true growth requires, then it may be time to find a new place to be planted as well. You won't be able to dance with your imagination and sift through what is and is not helpful if you spend your time trying to defend your new thoughts before you can even act on them. Now, what I mean by this is if you decide to grow and you don't change your environment, what you'll find is that your environment feels as though it's pulling you back into where you started. Right? It's a phenomenon that feels very real when it's happening. And that is because everything is in homeostasis around you. Everything is comfortable around you. Everything around you has learned to survive in a certain manner. So if you start screwing with that just because you want to grow, understand that everything around you is still on the same survival mechanism. So it's all going to feel like it's pulling you back to where you started. This is all true for adults. For children, we have the opportunity to teach them things from the beginning. Relearning how to use your imagination as an adult can change your life immensely, but teaching people to use it from the beginning could put them on an entirely new path. This path has the possibility of what could be and isn't hindered by what never was from the generation before them. This is why one of the most crippling things you can do to a human is take away their ability to imagine. Many people have many reasons for stripping the ability of wonder from the youth around them. But what you find is that it almost always goes back to them having had the same thing happen to them. We don't often think of this as generational trauma, but make no mistake about the fact that it is. If you step back and consider what you're asking when you tell someone to stop daydreaming, you'll see how traumatic it really is. Kids have a natural inclination to wonder so they can make sense of the world and draw a bridge from their thoughts to their reality. We are creating a lot of disconnected and unintegrated humans by stripping them of that ability. Instead, we program ridges around their thoughts and they end up feeling badly for what they naturally want to do. We collectively do this to so many children in the name of formal schooling, corporate religion, and good order and discipline on such a grand scale. We are dimming the world's light by orders of magnitude. Right? And this is just taking away. When you take away someone's ability to imagine new outcomes, you are stifling their hope, right? Because hope and active imagination are lovers. They are partners. They need each other. You know, it's with our active imagination that we're able to create the reality that gives us hope, the vision of reality that gives us hope, I should say. Should we decide to bolster the wonder of our youth as well as our own, there's no telling what products, services, or acts of unbelievable proportion we're missing. To expand the collective consciousness of the world, everyone that is in it must feel like they're free to let their thinking roam free. We will never grow if we're punished every time we expand. How many Elon Musks out there are working in accounting on the 9th floor of a corporation that produces widgets for the masses because they were told how ridiculous it would be to try to inhabit Mars? Lots of people have incredible ideas about what life could look like, but they're trapped inside of a thought pattern that won't let them explore it. Now they're funneling their creativity into squeezing more money out of government regulations instead of pushing our species into new frontiers. Another reason that people stifle a child's ability to imagine things is the same reason that someone would ever clip any bird's wings. You're afraid it will fly away. And the part of you that's insecure and afraid to lose it or lose the ability to control it makes the decision to leverage power by force to get what it wants. Every weak-minded leader in history has used the same tactic. I didn't write this, but it's also worth noting that that is the danger with the helicopter parent as well, right? You stifle their ability to go out and to fail and to become the person they need to become to survive with the rigors of the world, right? So by keeping them close, you kind of screw them over. That's why the bird gets kicked out of the nest. It's not because we want to see a bird splat on the ground 50 feet below. It's because we know that the only way it'll ever have to actually fly is if it does get kicked out. So at the highest expression of who we are, humans can conceive of a way to get ourselves on the moon. At our lowest, we get Auschwitz. Are you using your creative intelligence to build cages or launch pads? In a world where hell is always around the corner, it seems incredibly destructive to take away someone's ability to cope and generate their own hope. Every time you tell someone to stop daydreaming, you are chipping away at one of the greatest human gifts. Your ability to wonder is directly correlated with your ability to create your life in the way that you want it. It is the best tool that you have for coming to grips with transcending the outer edge of your reality. Like a tool, it can be made sharper or duller. It all depends on the way that you apply pressure to the blade. It is worth taking a moment to think about how you have personally applied pressure to your own blade. Do you allow your mind to wander and wonder and become solution-oriented? Or do you simply beat yourself up for being in such a negative situation? How are you applying pressure to your own blade? The wrong pressure will leave you ineffective. Something worth knowing about yourself is that you can't possibly perform at your best while simultaneously beating yourself up for not performing at your best. You can't be happier by pointing out all the reasons that you can't be happy. You also can't use your mind for good and give it the freedom to find the right solution or perspective if you are constantly ridiculing it for where it travels. Each of these scenarios, although quite common, is an example of applying the wrong type of pressure to your blade. Free thought is always the substance behind the fabric of revolution. If you want to revolutionize your own life, you may need to set your thoughts free. Ridicule is self-directed when people have a poor understanding of their role, of the role of their minds in their lives. See, the mind is the rationalizing part of you that adds judgment to what the eyes see. That judgment is further decided to be good or bad by you, the being behind the mind. The mind simply gives you a narrative about everything that happens in your life so that you can understand where you are. It adds context to life so you can orient yourself in the world. Now, some of that context will be cemented in your psyche when it's sure of what it has experienced. It tells you that a bed is for sleeping and a phone is for talking, or I guess used to be. It's your mind that knows this as soon as you see those things, based on the context you've experienced in the past. Choosing to believe a certain narrative is the choice that you get in this life. So just think about it this way. You know, I could sum this up by thinking your mind, imagine you're walking through the world and it's just labeling things. And when it does that, it's labeling things so to make sense of them, but you're the one that decides if the label is accurate or not, right? And so oftentimes what happens is let's say we get burned by the opposite sex, and then our mind labels the opposite sex as something that can burn you to stay away from. Now it's you that decides, is that label going to help you? Do you actually want a deeper relationship? Do you actually want love? Because if you do, you have to not believe the narrative that your mind is sending you. The choice that you have is to believe or not believe the thought that pops up in your head, the narrative. Remember that from the time we're born, we're always scavenging our environment for information that will help us navigate it. It's important that we remember this and use what we find for what it actually is, objective information about the world around us. The narrative that your mind attaches to the things around you says nothing about who you are as a person or your worth. When the mind is used as it's supposed to be, it gives you objective context for the present moment based on past experience. You know you're giving your mind too much agency over your life when the information grows subjective. We tend to act as if the past says something about us, independent of the world. What is actually true is that the past only holds information about how you engaged with the world in the past. Your entire life is a series of subject-object relationships with everyone and everything around you. If you don't like something that has transpired in the past, it is unproductive, not to mention inaccurate, to try and label yourself based on it. See, because if you're a loser, what hope do you have at starting to win in the future? If you recognize that you acted a certain way in the past and that way has resulted in loss, then you're positioned to reparent yourself around those scenarios in the future. This will improve your relationship with your life. Inner growth is about continuously being able to do that. That's why the end of the hero's journey is atonement, or at-one-ment. It is to reconcile yourself with your life. That's why we go on these hero's journeys in the first place. That's why we try to grow. Because when we start to feel friction in our lives, we're being invited to a deeper experience. The past is something that no longer exists except for in your mind. It's only you who insists on dragging it into the present moment, and it is only you that can allow it to say something about your character today. The past contains information about how to proceed with the moment. However, after some reflection, if we don't leave the past alone, it will hijack our moments and eventually our future. As you orient yourself and make your way in the world, the mind continues to do what it does, adding a narrative to things so that you can understand them. Over time, you slowly learn what's acceptable and what's not. The problem is that outside of survival, the mind doesn't really have an agenda. The mind is often just throwing stuff at the wall to see what sticks. If the narrative makes sense to you and matches the reality that you've come to know, then it will likely be cemented as you adopt it. It's important that you understand that your current existence is a result of the current narratives that you're living out. So you might just say that your entire world is a story that you're telling yourself. Every time your mind spins up a narrative, it is you who chooses to adopt that narrative. Once you do, it is you who will live it out. Often our minds will tell us something counterproductive, and we will believe it without ever asking ourselves if the thought is productive or if we even want it in our heads. Again, usually when our mind starts spinning, we actually feel like we are at the behest of that narrative. It will confirm its own bias or what it comes up with, and it will keep spinning further and further from a place of contentment. Okay, so I've got, five more pages left. What I'm going to do is I'm going to call this podcast right here. I think that's far enough for today because we're like 25 minutes into this thing. And then tomorrow I will read the rest of this chapter with commentary. And then, I don't know, maybe Saturday or Monday, I'll keep going. I'll do the other chapter as well anyway. But I think 30 minutes, that's long enough for a day. Let's recap this real quick, though. You know, your mind gives you labels to help you navigate the world. Now, if the labels that your mind is giving you are not helping you navigate the world, that is something worth considering. Right? That is something worth exploring. That is something worth taking apart and relabeling. Because at the end of the day, your mind is your navigational system, right? You get in your car and you turn your GPS on and it tells you where to go. You walk outside of your door, your mind is doing the same thing. You know, at the beginning when your GPS is loading all of the maps and it's like spinning around, it's like trying to figure out, okay, where are we in time and space? That's what your mind is doing. Now, it might be that the world that you've gone through has given you a poor map, a poor understanding, or maybe the map that it's configured right now isn't going to get you where you want to go. So that's what I'm trying to draw attention to in this chapter. And so maybe today, if you're going about your day, it's worth just considering, where is your map leaving you a little bit less content in your own life? I love you guys. Hope you have an amazing day. We'll talk tomorrow on Morning Coffee.